The Fan on Demand.
Yes, this is Aces on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. I am George Russick, filling in for Roger Lajoie, but as always, from beautiful Paris. Yes, Paris, getting ready for the French Open. That would be Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada. Tom, how are you, sir?
I'm fine tonight, George. I wanted to be as sharp as I could for the show, so I sacrificed on the wine with supper tonight, had a couple of beers. So I'm not exactly jacked up, but I think I'm a little bit more alert than I would be if I had too many glasses of wine.
Tom, I'm sure the listeners appreciate you're the ultimate gamer, not having too many glasses of wine in beautiful Paris. This segment of Aces is brought to you by Tennis Canada. Check out Rogers Cup in Toronto August 4th to the 12th. For tickets, visit rogerscup.com. You'll have your chance to win some Rogers Cup tickets later on in the program by guessing our mystery voice. But Tom, we have a jam-packed edition of Aces. You had a chance to do a couple of interviews before the show. Well, I want to tell us about those interviews.
Well, I talked to Todd Martin. I think a lot of people remember he was part of the great American generation with Chang and Courier and Agassi and Sampras. He was number five of that group. No shame in being that. And a very smart guy, an interesting guy about tennis. And first I talked to Michael Downing, the president of Tennis Canada. We got a busy summer coming up this summer. A lot of stuff going on with the Rogers Cup, both in Montreal and in Toronto. So I just sort of wanted to feel out what's going on and talked to Michael a few days ago.
Michael Downing, welcome to Aces.
Thanks, Tom. We're looking forward to helping out tonight.
You've been involved with politics at a very high level, both the ATP and the WTA tours. How do you look at the way things are going for both tours at the moment?
I think very well. If I start with the WTA, you've got Stacey Alistair, who we know really well, given that she ran our Toronto tournament for years. She's now into her second contract. Things are going really well at the WTA. You know, she's got her challenges, as all tours do, but with her leadership, I really feel they're gonna find a new home for their year-end championships, and they'll find a new title sponsor to replace Sony Erickson. And then if I shift over to the ATP, we've got a new chairman, Brad Drewitt, an Aussie who has a lot of experience both on-court and off-court. He was obviously a top player for many years, and he's been with the tour for years as well. So we've got a new chairman there that understands the product, understands the issues, and I think he's going to bring a great kind of practical leadership to the ATP. And then on top of that, the men's game is so strong right now that it's really about optimizing the marketing and commercialization of the ATP at this point in time, and Brad will do it well.
Tennis is an international game with interest groups from all over the place. How intriguing is it to be in some of the sort of powerful negotiations that go on at the board level?
Oh, I think it's really fascinating because, while in many cases, getting the two tours and the ITF and the Grand Slams together and trying to sort out the best direction for the sport, and sometimes that gets in the way because people have different interests. But as well, it raises just a higher level of interest because people have different focuses for whatever end of the game they actually lead. But all in all, the game keeps growing, and that's why we're seeing such a great strength with our two tournaments, because it's leveraging the assets of the great game worldwide.
You came to tennis 8 years ago with not too much experience with the game. What have you come to like most, and what impresses you the most about professional tennis?
Oh, I think it's how difficult it is. You look at the average male and female and what they have to go through to be successful in this tour, and I'm not sure there's another sport that comes close to it. These guys go week in, week out, and they cross the continents. Some of these guys are playing 20, 25 tournaments, and the ladies do the same, and it's a grueling sport. And as you know, Tom, it's a sport that you're really by yourself out on the court, and you don't have a coach to help you. There's no other sport that really has that. And I think these are phenomenal athletes.
The summer of 2012 is almost upon us. Obviously, the Rogers Cups are not too far away. First, in terms of Montreal, what can we expect with the women's event there?
Well, it's Eugène Lapierre is going to put on a good tournament, as he always does. We're expecting a good turnout of the top ladies coming into Montreal, because it is really the biggest single-week tournament in the world when the women come into Montreal. Eugène's looking at innovation, so on Monday night he's going to have a Legends event. So what he's basically done is taken the learning from Toronto last year and applied it to Montreal. And he's got Andre Agassi and Jim Courier and the two Martinez playing on Monday night. And that's going to be very special from an innovation end. And I know it's selling well, and the crowds in Montreal are looking forward to seeing these great legends on top of the WTA product.
You have a Monday night final, I think, as well in Montreal this year, don't you?
Yes, we do, actually. We have a Monday, for the first time, I think, in our history, we've got evening finals. And, you know, since I've been here 8 years ago, I've always wanted an evening final. You and I have talked about it. And we've got a Sunday night final in Toronto and a Monday night final in Montreal. And we're really looking forward, because I think tennis under the lights is as good as it gets.
People in Toronto are obviously very interested in the men's event this year. What's cooking for Toronto and the Rogers Cup in 2012?
Well, the men coming back is really, really exciting, and it's more exciting than normal because we've got young Milos Raonic coming back, and he's going to come, you know, he's, what, 21, 22 in the world now, so who knows what ranking he's going to have when he rolls into Toronto in early August. And this is going to be very special because we've got the home kid coming home from Thornhill. You know, we're in the midst of breaking a dedicated ad campaign just on Milos Raonic because we know his star power in this marketplace is going to be superb. But on top of that, we're looking at some other innovations. We're going to plus out our grandstand court, which is the number two court. We're going to bring Hawkeye to that so people can see the challenges. And we're going to make it a full court like the main court. And we're going to also add a viewing lounge for people to be able to watch and have a beverage while they're on the grandstand court. We're also bringing the Best of Tennis Channel. So we know from our research that Canadians love Tennis Channel. They can't get it in this country. And we're going to bring the Best of Tennis Channel on site so people are going to be able to see that great product throughout the week. And last but not least, we're going to do something different on Free Family Weekend, which is the qualifying weekend. That's August 4th and August 5th, where people can come and watch qualifying tennis for free. And this is high-quality tennis, as you know, because these are the guys trying to get the wild card, the final positions into the main draw. And we're going to bring a non-tennis product. We're going to bring the legendary Harlem Globetrotters. They're going to play on the outdoor main court on Saturday afternoon at 2 o'clock. It'll be a ticketed event, but we've priced it for families because that's a long weekend. It's the long weekend of August. And we're going to have fun with this to try to attract maybe 4,000 or 5,000 people that normally wouldn't come up for tennis. And I think when they see the Globetrotters and walk around and see the tennis, they're going to be quite taken by the tennis product. And interestingly, we've had a lot of interest from tennis players to actually play the Harlem Globetrotters. You know, I was out in Vancouver in February for Davis Cup, and the only question Daniel Nestor asked me was, have you done that deal with the Globetrotters? Because he wants to suit up for the opposing team and actually play the Globetrotters. And Milos Raonic has said the same thing. And we expect a bunch of the American players are going to want to play basketball as well. So I think it's going to be fun for the so-called family crowd and the tennis crowd because they're going to get the best of both products in a very innovative idea, and let's see how we do with it.
Let's make sure that both Daniel and Milos tape their ankles well and we don't have anybody going over an ankle.
I think, Tom, in the end, we've talked to the Harlem Globetrotters about that, and they do this often with celebrities, and you know, the guys are going to come in, but there's going to be no risk of injury here. There's too much at stake at that end. This is going to be a fun game of basketball for the tennis players that decide to play basketball.
Canada was supposed to play Davis Cup away in South Africa right after the U.S. Open and the World Group playoffs in September, but South Africa has now declined for financial reasons. How happy are you for the team that they're going to be playing at home?
Oh, ecstatic. Because, as you know, it's a really tough summer for pro tennis players this year. Not only the regular circuit, but we've got the Wimbledon Olympic Games in July, so they have to fly back to London for that. So for our Canadian players to be able to play in the U.S. Open and not have to fly, 15 or 16 hours to South Africa to play the following week in Davis Cup is a major win. So they can play at home. And we also know just the home crowd has such an advantage in Davis Cup. And wherever we decide to put it, and we're looking across the country, we're talking to 4 or 5 different cities, we know that the fan base is going to come out and it's going to be an extra man on the court and help us beat the South Africans and then advance back to the World Group next February.
How important is it for Tennis Canada and for the country to stay in the World Group?
Oh, Tom, I think it's very, very important. And we saw it firsthand this year in February. Even though we lost to the tough opposition from France, you know, we had nearly 600,000 people watch the tie on TV. There was a lot of interest coast to coast. You know, we're in the elite group and we're in the world group and we're playing the best of, you know, whether it's Spain or France or Serbia or whoever we get. And this is really going to grow the sport here, not only because we want to go deep in Davis Cup, but it's going to bring out that casual fan that really hasn't had over the last 8 or 10 years, the opportunity to cheer Canada at that high level of tennis.
Everybody always talks about Milos Raonic. Obviously, he's a very exceptional player. We really haven't had somebody as good as him in the past. What effect does Milos have on your job and on Tennis Canada in general?
Well, he makes our job easier because the media, like yourself, want to follow this this star player who's now, what, 21 or 22 in the year. And the coverage that we get for Milos across this country just raises the profile for our sport. And I have to believe there's quite a few kids today that are hitting the ball that wouldn't have been hitting the ball because they picked it up because of Milos Raonic. And I also believe there's a lot of sports fans out there that now that are following tennis because of Milos. And that's only going to get better as he advances towards the top 10.
A lot of people have been watching the tennis coverage on Sportsnet, and I guess I'm sure you've had a lot of comments about the kids' tennis commercials, obviously featuring Milos as well as a young boy and a young girl. Can you tell us a little bit about how those commercials were put together and what the idea was behind them?
Yeah, it's and we have had an awful lot of interest globally, actually. The ITF has now put it on their website. And I think we've had close to 20,000 views on YouTube on those two spots. So they're getting a lot of play. Really, it started last year when we sat down with Milos and we said, look, we'd like you to support an aspect of the game. And we presented the opportunity of him becoming an ambassador of kids tennis in this country, and he got right behind it. So he volunteered his time at the start of Davis Cup in February to actually shoot those two PSAs. He gave up a full day on the Sunday before Davis Cup. And I was actually there at the shoot, and he had a lot of fun with the kids shooting the public service ads. And then we've also got a poster and print campaign that supports it. And this is really, really important for kids tennis, because not only are they good spots and they're reinforcing the value of kids playing what I'll call right-sized tennis, smaller courts, softer balls, and smaller rackets, but to have our Canadian icon, Milos Raonic, support it just goes one step further in making it very meaningful for parents and kids with respect to getting them out and playing tennis.
And how did they pick the two kids, Michael?
Really, they're talent. So these are actors, and they were local talent in Vancouver. I think one was an 8-year-old and another was a 10-year-old, and they were just terrific, actually. Milos was shocked at how good they were, and he still laughs about the little boy and the little girl and how they interacted with them. And it's great to have that kind of talent in this country, and I think both of them have probably picked up tennis as a result of being in those commercials.
Well, Michael, there's a lot of interesting tennis ahead for the rest of the summer. I wish you the best of luck, and thanks a lot for being on Aces tonight.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Tom, always an exciting time for tennis fans in this country. I know the Rogers Cup will be extremely fan-friendly. I'm definitely looking forward to it. And I definitely enjoyed the part when he was talking about those commercials involving those kids and Milos Raonic. Great spots for Milos there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a no-win proposition for him, because there's no way you're not going to be upstaged by those kids. But Milos did a good job. But both the young boy and the young girl were terrific. I think I've crumbled like an oatmeal cookie a few times on the tennis court.
I know, Tom, I've been on a chicken finger binge myself. You will have chances to win Rogers Cup tickets later on Aces here. But after the break, we visit with Todd Martin, a big serving American, really similar game to our own Milos Raonic. That and much more coming up next on Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And yes, this is Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I am George Russick, in for Roger Lajoie, joined by Tom Tebbit from Paris, France. Tom, you had a chance to chat with a big serving American, Todd Martin. Very similar game to our boy Milos Raonic. Want to talk about that interview that's just coming up?
Yeah, I mean, Todd is an interesting fellow. He's always been a bit of a deep thinker of tennis, and he was maybe second fiddle to some of their bigger names at that time with the American players, but he was the president of the Players' Council for a while, widely respected, and an interesting guy to talk to, so I was very privileged to talk to him a couple of days ago.
You played in two Grand Slam finals. You lost to Sampras at the Australian Open in 94, and you lost to Agassi at the U.S. Open in 99, and that one you led 2-1, so a real decent chance to win it. How would winning a Grand Slam have changed your life?
Well, you know, I don't think it would have changed my life at all. I mean, I think it would have changed my career a little bit. I think it would change the way, you know, people look back at my career now, as opposed to how they do. But and it might have had an effect on how I look back on my career. But you know, I valued the losses a lot, and that, as bizarre as that might seem, I just felt like I've always felt like the losses are a big part of life, and tennis was a big part of my life all my life, and it's taught me a lot. And one of the things that it's taught me is that not always does it go your way, and you got to figure out how to make it go better the next time.
Well, anyway, in your career, you beat a lot more guys than beat you, so you can console yourself with that.
Yeah, just not Agassi and Sampras.
Right. I think you played Jimmy Connors back in 1991, but in 2001, you played Roger Federer. I think it was the only time you played him in your career. It was a Davis Cup match. You lost in four sets. Maybe this is back to the theme you mentioned earlier, but do you remember fondly having a chance to play a guy like Federer, even if it was only once?
Well, it was. I found it to be a pretty special occasion. I knew that I don't remember what his ranking was at the time. He was probably top 20, but it was pretty. It was pretty evident that other than Hewitt of his generation, he was going to be a pretty special player. But be able to play, I loved playing away Davis Cup ties, and to be able to play a young Swiss team, and I had a young team with me in the U.S. guys. You know, it was Dan Michael Gamble, I think Justin Gimelstob and me, and we it was Andy Roddick's first tie, although he wasn't supposed to play until I got injured. And playing Federer there, there was a great feel. It was an amazing intimate. I think it was played on sort of a hockey rink arena, and. It was my first opportunity to get a feel for how Federer played, and I was really very impressed. He did a lot of things very well. He put me in a lot of awkward positions, which I've always deemed to be the most important thing when you play tennis. But he hit two of the best shots I've ever played against, and they were consecutive points, and I don't know if it was the first or second set tiebreak. He won the first two sets, either 6-4, 7-6, or 7-6, 6-4. And but I think it was the second set tiebreak. And I served him volley, hit a great volley into the open court to his backhand, and he had a running backhand topspin lob that I thought he wouldn't even be able to get to, and he, just hit a perfect lob, landed on the baseline. Next point, I attacked his second serve, came to the net, had a pretty easy volley. I hit it pretty well, not great, and he hits a running forehand lob, literally a mirror image of the backhand lob he just hit, and almost landed in the same exact spot. And, it was a really critical point in the match, as are all tiebreaks, and he came up with – I played two of the better points I could have, and he came up with the two best shots of the match, and that I think more than anything that might be the indicator of greatness.
You spent some time being a coach with the Djokovic team, I think a couple of years ago. What did you learn about him during that time?
Well, I learned he's got more physical abilities than anybody I've ever been on the tennis court with. Novak is just an incredible talent. He's flexible beyond belief. He's incredibly fast, but he also he's a tremendous competitor. I think that when he had a little bit of a bad rap for not being a fighter, and I never saw that. I think his limitations were certainly psychological in their nature, but it was, I think, more fear than anything else. And when he became fearful, he played defensively, and so it didn't look great on the TV. But yeah, he is you put him out there, and he's out there to do a fight. And I think the biggest change for him over the last couple of years is I think he's put in a lot more of the work that's necessary to prepare himself, which let's say manifests itself in some self-confidence when he gets into the jam, knowing he's done the work, knowing he's capable of things that he's practiced, and now where he used to try to bob and weave his way around guys like Federer and Murray, he goes out and he just takes the game to him and has finally realized that he can overpower those guys, out-hit those guys, out-move those guys. His skills and talents are really greater than anybody else's, and it's just a matter of going out there and not trying to overthink things and just have at it. Let the strengths go against the strengths.
How surprising was his 2011 season for you? I mean, it was really almost impeccable through the U.S. Open.
I was surprised. I mean, Novak is one of those guys where if you were to ask 20 people in the know about how to play the game and how they saw the professional game, I think everybody would say this is the guy that can really rock the boat of the Federer and Nadal discussion and all the who's going to be the greatest of all time when it's all said and done. And until you see it, you might not believe it. And so last year, the fact that it did happen, and it did happen from the beginning of the year, and it just never seemed to stop happening. I was surprised by Federer when he had an amazing year early in, what was it, probably 2004 or 5, something like that. But with Federer, it was probably more expected because he had been building momentum. And, Novak ended 2010 well, but, I was really surprised that it was just so sustained. And then when he collapsed against Federer at the French Open, I saw a lot of the old Novak, sort of a little bit apprehensive to fight toe-to-toe, a little bit over-emotional and over-demonstrative about how bad of a day he was having and how unlucky he was being and so forth. I think I might be most impressed with the way he recovered from the French Open to come right back and win Wimbledon and then finish off the Grand Slam calendar with another win at the U.S. Open.
As a Canadian, I have to ask you what you think of Milos Raonic. Obviously, he's very popular here and a lot of expectations for him.
I think the world of Milos, I watched Milos play a couple of matches at the U.S. Open in 2010 in the qualifying, and then I was very impressed with his talent. Big kid, great serve. His second serve is amazing, but it looked like he didn't understand that the ball had to be in the court in order for him to be offensive, the beginning of 2011, I saw him play again. I was really impressed that he had, let's say, tempered his game and learned how to keep the ball in the court long enough to get a hittable ball. And that is for big guys whose games are predicated on offense and power. It's just not so simple as to see ball, hit ball. And with Milos, he learned that if he can just stay in there long enough, he's got great weapons off of both sides, and he can really create a lot of damage. And he's going to set the trend of offensive second serving. And his second serve is just spectacular. And at disappointed to see that he got hurt last year, but I think all signs are that he's healed well and he's ready to make a good run of it in this second and third year here.
How's the golf game? Do you still have a 2 handicap?
I don't. My golf game is a little bit underused at this point in time, but I think that's the nature of having young families, and I'm happy to spend my time with my family and not my 5 hours on the golf course. So I'll be happy to play once every 3 or 4 weeks and be a 6 handicap and talk about the days when I once was a 2 handicap.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us today, Todd.
Tom, anytime. Thanks a lot. Thanks a bunch.
Tom, really good stuff there from Todd Martin. What really piqued my interest was how he mentioned the potential he saw in Novak Djokovic, and even how he was surprised by last season's success, and his take on the maturing Miloš Raonic. And what impressed me was his golf game. Wow, a 6 handicap. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, he's not the only good golfer on the tour. I think right now maybe the best one is Marty Fish, but Rafael Nadal is also excellent. And back in the day, Tim Henman was a really, really good golfer. I know he still plays a lot. At one point near the end of his career, he had to stop playing golf because it was bothering his back a bit and hurting his tennis.
That's interesting. I did not know that about Mr. Henman. That's a little unfortunate. Tom, this segment of Aces is brought to you by Corona Extra, the official beer sponsor of the ATP Tour. Corona Extra, ready to serve, ATP World Tour Premier Partner. Want to know who Tom and I like to win the French Open on both the men's and women's side? Djokovic. That and this week's Mystery Voice all ahead on Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
This is Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I am George Russick in for Roger Lajoie this week. On the line, Tom Tebbit of Tennis Canada, live from Paris, France. This segment of Aces is brought to you by National Bank, proud sponsor of the 2012 Rogers Cup. Tom, you have your chance to win tickets to that Rogers Cup later on this segment in our Mystery Voice. Tom, give us a little bit on that.
Well, we have a Mystery Voice, which hopefully won't be quite as easy as the first one. The first one was Roger Federer, and if anybody didn't get that, they were qualified from listening to the show for the rest of the season. So this one's a little bit tougher, and as well, of course, you get the chance for 2 tickets for the opening night, August the 6th of the Rogers Cup, and you also get your name put in a hat for the end of the season. The 11 winners will get a chance for a Wilson Series BLX racket, which, of course, is a series of rackets that includes Roger Federer's magic wand.
Yes, Tom, you get that chance to hear the Mystery Voice later on this segment, but first we have tennis's second major, which I equate to the PGA Tour of the majors in golf, Tom. Not the sexiest major, but again, the second one on clay in France. Obviously, let's start with the women first, which you like, and Serena Williams so far having a dynamite season on clay. She is 17-0 this year, Tom. What do you like her chances at Roland Garros?
Well, I mean, I always say I think the 3 favorites probably are Victoria Azarenka, who's the number 1 player in the world, Maria Sharapova, who's the number 2 player in the world, and Serena. It doesn't really matter what she's ranked, even if she is number 5 right now. But if you tell me that they're all going to play just about their best, then I tell you Serena's going to win the tournament. But it's not necessarily going to happen that way, and you never know what can happen. As the players get older, she's 30 years old now. I think as the players get older, they're a little bit more nervous. It means a bit more to them. Same thing with Sharapova. I think at 25, it means a lot to her. It's been a while since she's won a Grand Slam. If she happened to win in Paris, it would complete her career Grand Slam because she's already won Wimbledon, the Aussie Open, and the U.S. Open. So I think maybe the pressure can come into it sometimes, and you never know. A certain day, it's hot, it's windy, it's damp, it's cold. The other player's playing well. So like I said, if everything, all things equal, Serena would be the one that you logically pick. But, things can change, and I have my doubts that maybe somehow she'll actually make it.
Tom, she had an interesting quote mentioning that her personal life, she's not going to date anybody for 10 years. Any insight on what is going on personally around her that she said she only wants to now focus on tennis?
Well, I don't know if you know what hyperbole means, but I think it means to
deliberate exaggeration, so I wouldn't put too much into that, what Serena said. But she's always been good for a colorful quote, and I'm sure that there'll be something going on in her love life. But I really do think she has rededicated herself. And since she came back from her problems, she had a blood clot, which caused her a lot of serious problems at the beginning of last year. I think she's made a real effort to get more fit than she's ever been. So that's a huge advantage for her, and she's looking very good that way. So she'll be out there really trying to win. Disappointing last year that she couldn't come through. She only played Grand Slams at Wimbledon and U.S. Open, got the final of the U.S. Open, lost to Stosur. So, and then, of course, she lost to Makarova, a bit of a surprise at the Australian Open this year. So she's got a lot to prove, and I'm sure she'll be very keen at least to win either the French Open or Wimbledon.
Tom, the biggest wild card of the field has to be her sister, Venus. What's your take on her play coming up at the French Open?
Well, she's playing very well for, you know, she has Sjogren's syndrome, which is sort of a syndrome that causes some problems in terms of her endurance. And I really think she can play some good matches. There's no way she can go through seven matches. I think she's shown that since she came back this year. But she has played amazingly well at times, and she would be dangerous for any person on any one day.
Especially with the draw coming out tomorrow, I don't think any of the top players want to see her in the first round, especially because she's unseeded. That would not be a favorable draw for one of these women. You were mentioning Maria Sharapova. She's coming off titles on the dirt in Stuttgart and Rome. What do you assess her chances? Maybe Serena's the favorite. Sharapova's a 1A, maybe?
Well, actually, I'm going to pick Victoria Azarenka to win. I watched her practicing today. She's got Amelie Mauresmo acting as her sort of consulting coach here in Paris, and she seemed pretty determined today. And, you know, she won the Australian Open. She's had a little bit of a physical problem at her last tournament, but I think somehow she'll be coming back strong. I just have a feeling with Sharapova, I'm very impressed with what she's done lately, and she deserves all the credit. But you think about how disappointing she was in the Wimbledon final against Kvitova last year, and even more disappointing against Azarenka in the Australian Open final this year. You just wonder if the big occasion comes, if she's up to it, if she might not sort of just feel the nerves too much. And like I said earlier, with Serena, at 30 years old, you just sort of wonder, you know, that definitely her strokes are still there, but maybe mentally she gets a bit vulnerable at times. So I'll just take a bit of a flyer and choose Azarenka to win it.
Back to Sharapova one sec. You think it's all mental right now for the big occasion, nothing to do with those lingering shoulder problems? She's 100% healthy?
I think she's almost healthier than she's certainly healthier than she's ever been since her surgery. I think her surgery was in 2008, and it was a major surgery. It was never quite revealed how serious it was, and she's had a lot of problems since. But I think, like her sort of manic double faults that she went through many times, that's become less and less of a problem. She does double fault now, but I think she's just going for her second serve, and really she's playing excellent tennis. But like I said, I just got a feeling that, you know, as you get older, you sort of value the chance to win these things. I remember when she won Wimbledon 2004, she was just golden, the 17-year-old. Swinging for the fences and everything was going in. But it's, you know, at 25, she's engaged. I think she's getting married later in the year. Just everything comes a little more serious. You just don't have that freedom to hit out like you used to. And she's shown that, you know, both at Wimbledon last year and in Australia earlier this year.
Tom, we're talking about Serena, Venus, Sharapova, Azarenka, but what about the defending champion, Li Na? What do you like her chances going in? She's definitely a dangerous player on clay.
Well, I mean, she came with one point of winning Rome last weekend, and she really hasn't been very good so far this year, but she was very impressive last week in Rome, and that's really terrific because obviously going to give her some confidence. She's a terrific player. I love watching her play. She's got a beautiful backhand. She's a really good athlete. She's a clean striker of the ball. I really, you know, you bring that up now, I really hadn't thought about it too much, but if she has a good run of form, she's definitely a threat to win it, and she comes in a little bit under the radar, even though she's the defending champion, just because she hasn't played that well this year. But like I said, she played very well in Rome, and that's just a week ago, so she's got to be a little more confident than she would have been a month ago.
Tom, talking about flying under the radar, the 2010 champ Schiavone, what do you like her chances? Do you think she can make another surprise run in Paris?
I'm trying to figure out how you say no in Italian. I think it's no. And I know she's been playing very poorly this year. And believe it or not, since she won the French Open 2 years ago, she has not won a title. And she got to the final again last year against Li Na, which was kind of a bit out of the blue. So it's a real shame. She's a fantastic player. We all love to watch her play. But I think her sell-by date is maybe over now.
Tom, for the Canadian content on the women's side of the French Open, what does that look like so far in the tournament? Really thin this year?
Well, no, we got Alexandra Wozniak, who's number 57 in the world right now. She's a fine player. She's been playing very well this year. I think she'll be pumped to do well. She won two rounds here last year. She won one round here last year. So she knows how to play, and she's played big matches before here. She played Serena on the center court once. So I think she can give anybody trouble. And Stephanie Dubois is more of a sort of a counterpuncher than Wozniak is, but she's a real tenacious player, and if a player's a little bit off on the day, she has a chance. And we have Heidi Altaba, who's in the third round of the qualifying tomorrow, and she plays Giorgi from Italy, and a fair chance to win that match. So she has a chance to get in. So we could have three women in the main draw of the women's event, and we also already have three men in the main draw of the men's event.
Tom, for somebody who's new to the sport, can you just quickly explain the qualifying process at a major?
Well, it's actually the same size draw as it is for the main draw. It's 128 players, but you just play three rounds, so you get down to 16 players. The women's, I think, slightly different. They only have 12 players. And so you play down, you have to win three matches, and if you win those three matches, you get into the main draw. And there's a bit of a lure of additional ranking points, of course, but there's an even bigger lure maybe for some players. You get, even if you lose in the first round, you get something like $20,000. So that is a nice little bit of change that can help cover some of those expenses you have during the year.
All right, Tom, we've covered off the women, and now it's time for the men's side of things. Obviously, the favorite going in, Rafael Nadal. Is he gunning for his seventh title? Nadal is 45-1 career at Roland Garros. That's the best record of any player in a slam in the Open era. Tom, is he the man to beat?
Well, clearly he is after the final on Sunday in Rome. He looked in trouble a little bit in the first set against Djokovic. I thought Djokovic looked like he might have been able to take that first set. He got a bit of a dicey call against him when he was 2 points from winning it, and I thought he took it a little too seriously. He got upset when he didn't have to, and maybe shows that he's just not quite as confident as he was last year. I think last year he just would have sloughed it off and gone on, but this year he sort of hung on to it. Nadal held serve in that game, went on to win the first set, and then pretty well cleaned up in the second set. So Nadal's playing very well, very keen. Obviously, the only time he lost to was to Soderling, and that was the year that he had a knee problem. He didn't play for about 2 months after that, didn't play Wimbledon that year, so clearly the knee was bothering him. Plus, it was a time when his parents were splitting up. They've gotten back together since, but it was a very emotional time for him. So, I think there were lots of explanations for the reason he lost. So, if you forget about that one, he's basically been never lost here. So, he's a real force. But again, he's a bit like Serena. He's getting a little bit older, probably means a little bit more to him. And there are some people gunning for him. But really, I don't think Federer at this point on clay. I think maybe on grass, maybe in hard courts, especially on grass, could give Nadal some trouble. I think Djokovic is the main challenger for him.
That final last week in Rome, obviously weather was a factor, and I was reading that the wet clay was a factor maybe in Nadal dominating Djokovic like he did. Do you think that was a factor in any way hurting Joker's game at all?
The fact that he got so close to winning that first set, and then it was 5-4 for him, 30-all. He hit a forehand that landed on the outside edge of the line. Unfortunately, the lineswoman called it out, and it was good, and so they replayed the point. And, of course, when they replayed the point, Djokovic made an error and lost that point, and Nadal held serve. And like I said, I thought Djokovic was looking very good up till then. So mentally, he's just not as strong as he was last year. I think the second time around, you're just a little more vulnerable. It's sort of feel more pressure to defend what you did last year, which was almost perfection. Obviously, you can't do that. So I don't think the conditions made that much of a difference. I think a lot of it's in the head. And right now, obviously, Nadal's in a good space. But I don't think Djokovic will be that afraid if he happens to get to the final to play against Nadal again.
Tom, is there a buzz around Roland Garros that he can pull off the Joker Slam, winning four slams in a row? Do you think that really means that much to him at this point?
Oh, I think it's huge for him. I mean, not only does he finally get a chance to win the one slam he hasn't, but I think he's the first guy since Rod Laver in 1968 to be able to hold all four. And the only other guys who've had a shot at it, who won the previous three, were Federer and Pete Sampras. So it's a pretty special thing. It's not very easy to do. And if he was able to pull it off, I'm sure it would be enormously satisfying to him. And, we saw at times last year, and even, he went through hell at certain times to win the Australian Open back in January. Mm-hmm. But, he's a big match player, has been the last year and a half, and certainly he's capable of coming through. Last year here, I think when he lost to Federer, he'd won 41 matches so far that year. A lot of pressure on him, and undefeated and everything, and maybe he just didn't play quite his best, and Federer was fantastic. So you just never know exactly what combination of circumstances are going to come together, but the native talent is there, and I think if he plays his best tennis, I think he may be better than Nadal, even on clay, but it really, really takes his very best tennis, and Nadal will always make you do that to be able to beat him.
Tom, obviously another contender for the title is Roger Federer. He has the best record since the U.S. Open at 48-4. He has 7 titles to his name, but no majors in 8. What is Roger's realistic chances at winning this major?
Well, I don't think he can beat Nadal and Djokovic back-to-back. So that would be something. If he had to do that, I think that would be impossible. He might be able to sort of, if one of them got out of the way, and then, he could play one of them or something. But I think it's been very difficult. If you look, I think last year he was 1-10 against the other two guys, against Nadal and Djokovic. This year he hasn't beaten them. I just think they're a cut above, although you have to give him credit. He's played amazing tennis, and he's really handled everybody else. But it's really hard to believe that he can beat one of those two guys. But if one of them's not there, of course, if both aren't there, he's clearly the third best player in the tournament.
Well, Tom, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Thornhill's own Miloš Raonic, with a draw coming out tomorrow. We don't know who his opponents will be as of yet, but what do you gauge his chances in Paris?
I think if he wins maybe 2, 3, 4 rounds, he'd be very happy. He got to the semifinals in Barcelona, played a very good tournament there, and played a very good match against David Ferrer, who's one of the top 5 players on clay. So he showed he can play on clay. He was a bit disappointing last week, losing to Mayer in Rome in his first match. But, I think he can beat anybody on his day. It's a little bit different here playing 3 out of 5 sets. I think a big guy like him, maybe a roadrunner kind of guy who just gets a lot of balls back and hangs in there, can maybe wear him down a little more easily. Definitely not quite the sky's the limit, but I think on grass at Wimbledon, that's really his surface. So I don't think there's really a legitimate chance of him winning the title here. Getting to the semifinals, not impossible. Quarterfinals, certainly not. Round of 16, pretty good. But I think really, if you look at his type of game and what it's definitely suited to the grass more and to hard courts. So I think if he does well here, he can build up his confidence and then really get things geared up for Wimbledon. And obviously after that, 3 weeks later, the grass courts at Wimbledon again for the Olympics.
All right, Tom, I'm putting you on the spot again. Your pick on the men's side and the women's side.
Well, I'm going to go with Djokovic on the men's side, and I'm going to go with Andrej on the women's side.
Tom, you're near and dear to my heart. I got to go Djokovic on the men's side, Tom. I got to go Djokovic. I'm going to go Serena on the women's side, Tom. I think she can pull it off here. If she does have her quote-unquote personal issues in order, I think she can make a big run at Paris. 9 years later, win at the French Open. That's my pick. All right, Tom, it's time for our mystery voice segment. If you do have your guess, you can hit me up on Twitter at RussickSN590 with your guess. We will have the winner on next week's show. Shouldn't be too difficult if you are a tennis fan in this country. All right, here it is.
Thank you, ATP. You guys do a great job all year long. This is the best event of the year, culmination of a great year, and we appreciate everything you guys do. We love coming to London. Hopefully we can come back again. I want to thank our support staff. My parents are here, my wife, and most importantly, the best coach I've ever had, Scotty David. Thanks for everything, buddy.
All right. Shouldn't be too difficult if you're a fan of tennis in this country. If you do know the answer, hit me up on Twitter at RussickSN590. We will have the winner next week. Tom, any thoughts? Any guesses?
Last week it was almost like a skill testing question. It was so easy. So we made it a little more difficult this week.
Yes, but last week's winner who knocked it out of the park was Charlotte Brooking. Congratulations to her for knowing that Roger Federer was last week's mystery voice. Again, tweet me your answer of this week's mystery voice at RussickSN590. Tom, it was a pleasure hosting this week's edition of Aces. I hope you enjoy your time in Paris.
Well, thanks, George, and I'd like everybody to read my blog at lovemeansnothing.ca. It turned out very well today. Some are good, some are bad, but today's a very good, nice pictures of Milos, great pictures of Rafael Nadal, a fun picture of Federer, Heidi Altabau as well, and it was a busy day and it was a lot of fun doing my blog, taking the pictures today.
Okay, can't wait till next week. This segment of Aces is brought to you by MerchantOfTennis.com, celebrating 20 years, MerchantOfTennis.com, game, set, shop. Thanks again to Michael Downey and Todd Martin for joining the show. For Tom Tebbett, Roger Lajoie, I'm George Russick. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week on Aces on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.